set.
Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. All right, this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 101, and it's the week of June 25th. 2010. Thanks for downloading the show. Glad you came along for the listening to the podcast. And this week is going to be about the Hatfield McCoy Marathon and the Run Under the Stars Endurance Run that I went to. I didn't participate in those events. I accompanied two runners that I supported, and then I kind of crewed for these two guys when they did an ultra. And I've got a pretty decent race report from it. If you listen to the last show, you'll know that I was actually injured from doing my own 50-mile ultra marathon, and I was out of work for 2 weeks with filleted feet, really, really bad blisters, severe, extreme blistering that rendered me basically useless walking. But anyway, let me get into the this race report, because I had a really good time. Really glad that I went, and I'm glad that, because there was a point in time where I was going to be deciding whether I was going to go or not, and I'm really glad that I did. In this podcast, there's probably going to be a couple kind of cliche-ish West Virginia jokes, and it's, I'm just kind of apologizing ahead of time. They're just so easy to make, and most of the time they're kind of funny, and there was one little funny part on our journey that was very West Virginia, so I'm just saying that ahead of time in case you're from West Virginia. I don't think I've heard from any listeners from West Virginia, but in case you are, I just wanted to kind of give you a warning ahead of time. Four of us went. We left the Richmond, Virginia area around noon on Friday, June 11th, and that's Matt who, and Crash and Snuggy Bear and me, and we're all on Team Incognito, which is our running group. We're just four members of that. There's more than us on the team. And we got to Williamson, West Virginia, just in time for the pasta dinner, which was about 6 p.m., and it was under a big tent. And Williamsville, West Virginia, sits right on the river that separates Kentucky and West Virginia. And I think they call it Lower Williamson, that's on the Kentucky side, if I'm not mistaken. So, in other words, you're literally right between two states, and it was a beautiful drive out there. It really was, the driving through the mountains of West Virginia, and even southwestern Virginia was just beautiful. But I had been a bit worried about my feet and getting around on crutches, because I'd been on crutches while I was my feet were healing up from my race. And of course, my wife was really worried about me, and I had actually given the matter some real serious thought about whether I was going to go with the guys or not. After what Crash and saw what happened to my feet after the North Face Endurance Challenge run that I did, he contacted Matt, and they started getting a backup plan in case I wasn't able to go. So that's how Matt got involved in it. But I knew there was going to be a whole lot of sitting around a lot in the car, and there was, you know, any walking we had to do, I would be able to do on my crutches, and I would just be slow and bring a chair, and Matt was going to be my helper. And I knew I could use my crutches if we had to get around. My main concern was keeping my feet clean, because I still wasn't able to wear any shoes yet. And if Matt hadn't come along, there's just no way I could have done it all by myself, because it was just too much to do. And we had to move around a little bit too much for me to do that by myself. I couldn't carry everything that I had to carry. So since Matt had agreed to help me get around, I didn't really see any reason why I couldn't go. And I don't think my wife was too happy about that. But it was really just sit around at home or sit around in the car and at marathon finish lines in a lawn chair. That was, you know, otherwise I was just going to be sitting at home watching TV. So I just figured, well, I could help out some friends, at least do some driving. I mean, I could still drive. I couldn't drive a stick shift, but I could drive an automatic transmission. So we got to the pasta dinner, which was really cool, and there was plenty of food. Actually, there was a couple different types of pasta. When we got there, I just sat down and Matt got me my tray. And there was three different types of pasta to choose from. It was really good. And even though it was really hot and humid, we did enjoy being under the tent. It was, water was pretty hot and the forecast was for pretty hot. But if you've never heard of the Hatfield-McCoy Marathon, then you obviously don't know about a real long-standing feud in the Pikeville area in between Kentucky and West Virginia. And, I think it was Mingo County area. And this was between the Hatfield and the McCoy clans. And now one family was from West Virginia and the other was from Kentucky. And these families, feuded all through the years. I think there was even some killings. And then, of course, one of them cross-married or whatever. And that just fueled it even more. Anyway, what's happened now is that the ancestors of these families have kind of capitalized on the feud. Oh, I'm making myself yawn. And they've kind of combined to make the whole thing one big party. And they've tagged on a marathon with that. Now, and it's pretty cool. It's a very homegrown, local type of race. Now, when we were sitting in there for the pasta dinner, there was a lot of people there. It's clearly a lot of people came to eat. And a guy named Chuck Engel spoke about the course for a few minutes, and he got up and talked. And he went on to be the winner the next day. And I didn't realize this. I had never heard about him before. But he's apparently been recognized a lot for his marathon running. And one of many records that he holds is that he has the second most marathon victories in the whole world. And he's run 200 plus some marathons. Anyway, when we first got to the pasta dinner, he had made a joke about me being on crutches and needing a head start or something. And, I was like, whatever. I mean, I was tired of hearing the crutches joke. I had no idea who the guy was. I just thought he was kind of a smart ass. But turns out that he has some pretty good athletic ability. I mean, he wasn't rude or anything like that. But anyway. Now, the race director also spoke. His name was David Hatfield. So he was one of the family people. And he was kind of surveying the crowd to see who was from which state. And the reason is because this marathon can be used for 50 staters for Kentucky or West Virginia, but not both at the same time. So I guess some people come back and run it again so they can use it, for another state, people that are going for the 50 staters. And that was really cool. I mean, just listening to them talk for a little bit. And then two guys who were probably from the original families put on a little skit, complete with their rifles and their period clothing one guy I think had fake facial hair, but the other guy looked pretty authentic. And they put on a little one-act skit that essentially explained the basic history behind the feud. And, oh, gosh. And it was really good to hear all about it because they just put it in simple terms. And I guess it took about 15 minutes, and it was really interesting to hear how it kind of this feud grew up in this area, and now there's a marathon of all things tacked on as part of this big reunion that happens, I guess, around this time of year in that part of Kentucky and West Virginia. So it was pretty cool. We finished the dinner, headed back to the hotel. We had to stay at, which was about 20 to 25 minutes out of town, and the reason we had to stay out of town is because the only hotel in Williamson was full, and there was apparently another little Super 8 up the road, and that was full, and that was it for hotels. And the fire station apparently had set up cots, as the race director has said. He's seen people sleeping in the parking lot at the starting line before in their cars because there's just nowhere to stay. And he apparently has also had people sleep on his couch in the past if they've liked. And I think this race was in its 12th year, maybe the 13th year. Anyway, when we got back to the hotel, there was a Walmart in the general area. Yeah, we weren't that far from anywhere, really. And it just so happened that the World Cup tournament had already started on ESPN. Of course, I stayed up late watching that. And that kind of was the theme of the whole week after the race was the World Cup, because I spent a lot of time watching those matches because I was home from work. Race morning arrived pretty early. We all climbed into Snug's van, drove the 20 minutes or so to the start. While outside the hotel, I ran into one of the listeners of the podcast, Jamie from Florida. And she's the one that has the Runner for Good blogspot. blog. And it was really cool. I recognized her right away when I saw her. And but I didn't say anything at first because I was drinking coffee in the lobby and she was kind of getting... And I recognized her from her picture from her blog. And I knew that she was going to be there, so I was on the lookout for her. I didn't think I'd see her at the hotel. And anyway, I did ask her once I saw her the second time. And we chatted for a bit, and it was really neat. She was there with the group, and her daughter and daughter's boyfriend were involved with volunteering at one of the stops. And it turns out she's from that general area, not right there. She's from a different part of the West Virginia area. And so she was visiting, and she just decided to run the marathon while she was there. So it was really cool just to talk with her for a few minutes. We made our way to the Food City parking lot, which was where the race started, and which is just a regular grocery store. And the organizers had rock music playing out front. And this is where we got a big kick out of, was because there was lots of short buses shuttling people around, you know, the short school buses. And we never saw any long buses, so the joke was that maybe all they had was short buses in West Virginia. anyway, we thought that was funny. There was a whole lot of marathon maniacs there, and they took a group photo, which was pretty cool because John Snuggs got into that. And the starting line was essentially just a metal frame stand with a banner across the top. It was very low-key, very much my type of race. Those are the kind of things that I like. And you could tell that the race was homegrown, and I think that's what made it very appealing to me. And I kind of looked at it as the Ashland Railroad Run on steroids at the marathon distance. I mean, it was the same type of low-key atmosphere, friendly, no hype, no commercialization. It was just kind of cool. It's kind of hard to explain. I mean, this is me from a total spectator. Usually I'm a participant, but being, you get a whole different perspective when you're a spectator. So after the race started, Matt and I really had nothing to do until the end. So we went hunting around for a place to eat, and I wanted to find a really the local Greasy Spoon, a little diner or something. But we didn't find that. I guess everything was closed. The closest thing we found that early was a McDonald's. And I can't remember the last time I had breakfast at McDonald's. It's just not a place that I go to. I got nothing against it. It's just not a place that I really go. But it was good. We were really hungry, and I had an egg and cheese biscuit and two hash browns. And, man, that was just so good. And I think I had another cup of coffee. And what we did is we decided to see if we could do the marathon course in reverse and catch up, find out where the runners were by the time we had finished breakfast, just to kind of get an idea of how much time we had before we needed to get to the finish line. But we never found the runners. We found the mile markers going back to about mile 22, and then somehow we took a wrong turn and got lost. We didn't have the race directions. We just knew generally kind of where it was coming out of the hills into the town. And the problem we had was that there's no roads are marked. And we were driving along a road that actually was not on the Garmin that was in the car, the GPS. So I'm not really sure where we were. We were riding along a creek, which was on the GPS, but the road was not on the GPS. And we saw some strange housing. It was just, it was interesting. But there was no road signs, and we never found the pack of runners. So we decided to turn around before we got too lost. And we got back to town, and I was able to sweet talk her. What we did is we pulled into a 7-Eleven just to get, I got another cup of coffee, because I really didn't. We got up so early, and I'd stayed up late watching TV. I was really tired. And what we did, it was at a 7-Eleven, which was about a block from the finish. And I sweet-talked the clerk into letting us park our van right there in their parking lot, because I was on the crutches. And I didn't have any shoes on. My feet were just totally bandaged up. And I had those hospital booties on to keep the dirt off of them. And I was told that was okay by the doctor to wear those. And that's what I was going around, and I was able to put pressure on my right foot enough to walk on the crutches, but I couldn't put shoes on yet because they had to stay bandaged. And I looked pretty pitiful, and so I kind of talked our way into letting them leave our car there, because they weren't letting people park there for the race finish. So we did leave the car there. It was only a block from the finish, so we set up our chairs and waited. And that guy, Chuck Engel, finally made it in with an incredible finishing time of 2:49.59. And it was just incredible. Apparently, he saw the clock, the finishing clock, on his way in, and he saw that he was going to beat 250, and he just beat it by 1 second. I mean, he just sprinted in the last 50 or 75 yards, and he was just going so fast. It was just incredible. And then after he crossed the finish line, he just stopped and seemed to have a regular conversation with the race director. So it was really, it was interesting just to see him just basically stop, and he just looked fresh. The next guy was 7 minutes behind him, and then the others started straggling in from there. Now, Crash came in with an excellent finishing time of 3:50.31. That was good for 22nd overall. There were 225 finishers. Snuggy Bear came in shortly after that, 4:32.16, which was good for 79th overall. And unfortunately, we couldn't wait for Jamie because we had to get on the road to get to the next race because we were, in case I didn't mention that at the beginning of the show, the runners we were supporting were doing a marathon in the morning and then doing another marathon that evening. Two marathons within 24 hours of each other. And we just couldn't wait around for Jamie to see her come in because we had to get on the road. I had to get something to eat, and the guys wanted to get changed. But I did, like I said, I did email her later, and she said she had a great time running with her group. And so she had a later finishing time. But that's great, Jamie, and I think you've done close to 8 or 9 marathons, if I'm not mistaken. I know you've done several. So well done on that. The race organizers had some food at the finish. And I think Crash and Snugs got something to eat. I decided to wait. I wasn't really in the mood to eat some of that post-race food, which we would have had to purchase. Plus, it had been raining outside. We'd already sat through two rainstorms at the finish. And then Crash had said that he had run through 5 separate rainstorms during the race. And something about eating outside in the rain just really didn't appeal to me. But I can see how after running 26.2 miles and several rainstorms, wouldn't really make you care about sitting out in the rain and eating. So I think they got some barbecue or something to eat. And then off we went to drive another 6 or 7 hours to the next race, which was going to be in Paducah, Kentucky, which was west. Was not any closer to home. And it was at the Carson Park Horse Track in Paducah, Kentucky, which was very, very far from the Richmond, Virginia area, 12 hours about. Anyway, we tried not to think too much about the incredible amount of driving that would be necessary the next day because it would have just been... in fact, I did think about it a few times, and I just tried to put that thought out of my mind and just kept saying, you know what? Every minute on the road is a minute closer to home. Every mile is a mile closer. And we just try not to think about it too much because it was still another pretty exciting evening going to happen with these guys running another marathon. I think I was driving when we Matt and I exchanged the driving, and I think I was the one driving when we pulled into the racetrack because I remember seeing a huge sign that said no alcohol allowed, and this was going to be a problem because we had spent some time finding what they call a moist county in Kentucky as opposed to a dry county, and Matt and I had just packed a beer cooler because that's what we had planned to do while our runners were making their way around the half-mile track for the next 10 hours. But it turns out it was no problem at all because that sign was really just applying to the horse events that brings out a lot more people. And this was just, I think there were 50 people involved in this event. It wasn't very big at all, but it went on for 10 hours. So Crash and Snug seemed to be pretty good during their recovery while in the car, and I tell you, experiencing a 6 or 7 hour drive right after running a marathon isn't really the best formula for recovery, but that's all they had. I mean, they ate and drank, and I think Crash had some ice packs wrapped around his legs for a little while, and then they put a movie in the back of the van on the DVD, and I'm not sure if they napped or not, but they got kind of quiet for a while, and anyway, the movie they watched was The Spirit of the Marathon, and if you haven't seen it, it's pretty good. And as Matt and I shared the drive, you know, we just kind of listened to the movie. And I tell you, the time went by. Time went by very fast. I don't know how. It just seemed like it went by so fast. And of course, we're all talking a lot. Now Carson Park was a much different environment than Williamson. This was a larger city. It was in Paducah. It was nice. It wasn't an armpit, kind of how Williamson is a little bit. Ashland's a little bit of an armpit as well. It's got some real nasty little pockets, but for the most part, it's a nice little area. But I can see how somebody could call it an armpit. Now, Carson Park was a buggy track, meaning it's one of those horse tracks that where the people pulled a little buggy behind there. So it was really packed down cinders, but it did have some ruts in it, and there was a slight bank in the corners. And to remedy this, the organizers changed the direction of the race every 2 hours, so runners wouldn't be banking all. And it wasn't really banked that much. Crash told me it was a 1% grade. I couldn't really tell unless you looked up to the higher part, but I guess when you're running around it, you can tell. But we found a real good spot in the infield near one of the corners and set up camp. I really couldn't do much of anything because I could move around on the crutches, but I could only walk around so much, and I really couldn't do that much. But I kind of organized the table that we had set up that had all the runners' supplies on it, so they'd be easily accessible. Of course, I sat down, you know, near the beer cooler. But once the race started, it was pretty much the same thing for several hours. We would see the same folks running around the track. Every 5 to 10 minutes, you'd see the same people a couple times, and it kind of, including Crash and Snug, the people that we were there to support. And it kind of became a little bit of a strange etiquette that Matt and I debated a little bit, and you might find this kind of interesting. Do you, every time you see the same people, do you cheer for all the runners, or do you just kind of ignore them? Or do you, I mean, we were sitting right close to the track, so if Crash or Snugs came up to the table, we could tend to them. You know, it wasn't like 3 feet or anything. It was probably, 15 to 20 feet from the area where the people were running. And every time we saw Snugs and Crash, do you ignore them? Do you acknowledge them? We weren't really sure what we were supposed to do. I mean, especially after the race just started. I mean, our guys were in a little different boat than everybody else. I don't know of anybody else that was out there that had run a marathon earlier that morning. It's possible that somebody had. But I know that what our guys were doing was pretty special. So I kind of figured every time I saw them, we should kind of just clap for them a little bit. So what we did, or at least what I did, was I just started acknowledging anybody that was looking our way when they came around the corner, as opposed to saying something to every time. Now, there was a guy there named Marv that I know is an ultra runner from Colorado that I had met at a 24 hours of endurance run on October of 08, matter of fact. And so he came around a few times, and he looked in my direction a few times. So I would say, way to go, Marv. And after a while, he kind of was doing his own thing or run with somebody, or Matt and I were tied up in conversation. But it was just kind of strange when the race first started how everybody was fresh for the most part. Do you just watch them run around, or do you clap for them, or what? So it was kind of a weird etiquette. Maybe you don't think it is, but it was weird at the time. Anyway, we watched our guys clear 20 miles. At least, and then I just had to go to sleep. Matt had gone over to the race officials to check what their mileage was, just so we would know. And I guess it was around 1 a.m., I guess, that I went to sleep, because I knew I was going to be up before 6, because that's when the race ended, and at that point, all anybody's going to think about is really just wanting to get out of there. So I got, a good probably 5 hours of sleep, maybe a little less than that. But I really wanted to see Crash and Snugs clear the ultra marathon more. But, somebody had to be rested for the drive home, so I kind of had to. And that was the whole reason I really went, really, was to partake in the drive. And that was the original agreement from the beginning. But anyway, I got to add a little note here. Todd and Snugs were both going for a higher marathon maniac status, and that's why they did the 2 and 2 days, or 2 and 24 hours. Todd had already gotten into, or was eligible for the maniacs after finishing the Hatfield-McCoy marathon. And he could apply at that point. But he wanted to be able to apply for a higher status. And in order to do that, he had to run the ultra distance, which is the 50K mark, in the 10-hour event. Just doing 26.2 miles in 10 hours wasn't good enough for the maniacs to accept that. So that's why both guys went in for at least the 50K, so they could get the 10-hour endurance run under the stars, endurance run counted. And, so what's the point in doing 2 marathons 24 hours if it's not going to count for something? So I completely agree with them doing that. Plus, they got to do their first 50K. Now, when I woke up in the morning, Todd was sitting in one of the chairs taking a break. I think John was still on the track. I can't really remember. But they had both gotten their goal. Once all the miles were tallied, the final results were Snugs had done 33 miles and Crash had done 32. And this is guys finishing their first 50K after running a marathon just hours before. So it was pretty incredible. And the guy that won the whole thing did 60 miles in 10 hours, which was pretty incredible, at least to me, because it took me 12 hours, 48 minutes to do 50. Not on that day, the week before. Anyway, once we packed up our camp, we hit the closest Waffle House for one of the best breakfasts I think I've ever had in quite some time. And then we started the long journey home. I got tied up in some traffic a little bit here and there, but I think we got home about 8 or 8:30 that night, which wasn't too bad. Now, there were probably some people that are probably wondering why I went out of town if I was injured. And my feet were hurt, but there was really nothing else that was wrong with me. And I really didn't want to miss crashing Snugs doing something pretty incredible. And I didn't think it was going to make my situation any worse by going. I mean, I could drive, and that was really all I was needed for. And once Matt had signed on, I know he could handle a lot of the crew duties at the endurance run while he was still awake. And I'm not even sure how much he slept. I know he did some of the driving. We both handled the driving home. I don't really remember him coming in, getting into the tent. So I think Matt did sleep for a little while. But overall, it was just a great time. I'm so glad that I went. And that's the Hatfield-McCoy Marathon. And then the Run Under the Stars Endurance Run. And the Run Under the Stars Endurance Run, I think, is in its second year. And it was actually pretty cool. The only thing that Crash, I think, complained about was that there were some ruts on the track. But that didn't seem to bother him too much. He was able to still get his mileage goal. And I think he actually did it in just over 7 hours, if I'm not mistaken. Crash, you might correct me there. He didn't need the whole 10 hours, and I think that's why he actually came back and was sitting down. So that's the race report. Wow, it was a great time, and I definitely could see myself trying something like that. I've always wondered what it's like to go out and do an event where you don't know where the finish line is. The finish line is a time, not necessarily a place, and I just think that's an interesting concept. I'd mentioned a 24 Hours of Endurance event that I was involved in a couple of years ago. That was with a team, and it was... we just did 5-mile loops through a trail in the woods. And of course, you know, you would hand off to your teammate. So there was always a finish line. It was never really the finish was after 24 hours. And I think our group did 135 miles in 24 hours. Of course, you know, when you're rested, you can keep doing stuff like that. So I would like to try an endurance run sometime with time, just to see how many miles I can do in an amount of time, as opposed to just a distance event. I don't know. It's an interesting concept that I want to explore after watching them do it. All right. Well, that's the race report for this week. And I do have some emails I'm going to get to. So why don't we check out the email bag section of the show, and let's get started. All right, Rick checked in, and he sent me a link to a pretty cool video he made while running the Rothback Trail Challenge, which is it's near the Tussie Mountain Ski Area in Pennsylvania, and it's just shy of 19 miles of trails. 18.9 is what they advertise on the website, but essentially tonight that's 19. And I was looking at the website. It has on there that The trail challenge is designed to reward those who have trained and punish those who haven't. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com so you can go check out this pretty cool video that Rick made of the Rothback Trail Challenge. It's on YouTube, but I'll just put a link on my site so you can check that out. So, Rick, thanks for sending that on, and thanks for listening to the show. Also heard from Michael from the Falkland Islands. He checked in. Michael ran the Colorado Marathon last year after training through the winter in the Southern Hemisphere, which he said can be pretty darn extreme. What he did to train through the snow and ice, he screwed sheet metal screws in the bottom of his shoes to get a grip on the icy surfaces. And he said it worked really well. He's going to be making his way back to Colorado this year. Michael, I've heard of other people doing that as well. It appears to work. And appreciate the tip. Appreciate you tuning into the podcast. Nice to hear from you. First time I've heard from anybody down in the Falklands. Also, Richard from the Woodlands, Texas, checked in. And he's going to be the assistant coach for his running group this summer, which is called the Woodlands Fit Group. He's also considering the Waco, Texas Marathon, which is held in late January or early February. Because that would work really good for him, because he'll be finished recovering from the Texas Independence Relay, which he'll be doing for his fourth year. So, Richard, thanks for checking in. Richard's an original listener from 101 shows back. So, Richard, thanks again. Nice to hear from you. Also, my dad checked in on the website. Thanks for the comment, Dad. And I heard from Shelly in Pennsylvania. She works in Pennsylvania, but works in Virginia. And she said she's officially caught up with all the episodes now, at least the ones that are on iTunes. And she's very complimentary with my consistency, so thank you very much, Shelly. She finished her first marathon in May, which was the Flying Pig, and I think that one's in Cincinnati. And she has plans to do the Goofy Challenge in January of 2011. And if you haven't heard of what that is, most people have, but it is the Disney Marathon. And the Goofy Challenge is the half marathon on Saturday, the full marathon on Sunday. And what you do is, I think you get three medals. You get the half marathon medal, the full marathon medal, and then you get a third medal because you did the Goofy Challenge. And I've often wondered if I could do that myself, with some of these double long runs I've done. Surely, I guess I could do a marathon, then a half marathon the next day. I'm not so sure about a half marathon, then a marathon. I guess I did 50 miles. Maybe I could. Anyway, Shelly, best of luck to you in your training for that, and I hope that it continues to go well. Shelly has also started a new blog, which she would like some traffic on, so she doesn't just feel like she's writing to herself. It's at www.thefirerunner.blogspot.com, and I'll also put a link on my site to that, which is ashlanddave.podbean.com, so make sure you check that out. I think she's got some cool stuff on there. Shelly's a firefighter, so there should be some pretty neat stuff on there. Also heard from Chris over at the BQ or Die Blogspot. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate hearing from you. And Pat checked in out of Williamsburg, congratulating me on my 100th episode. And he said he listened on his ride to D.C. from Williamsburg. And he said his feet just hurt. His feet hurt just listening to the race report from the North Face Endurance Challenge. And Pat is just beginning the fall marathon training. He's going to be doing the Marine Corps Marathon and Richmond. And he said if he goes well, he's going to end the year in December with the First Landing 50K, which is Seashore State Park in Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, Virginia. Or it's actually in Virginia Beach. And I did that one last year, in the pouring down rain and the flood. But I guess otherwise it'd be a great race. The support was really good. And Pat thinks in the near term he's going to do the Patrick Henry half. So, Pat, I think we've already mentioned this, but if you do decide to do the Patrick Henry half, I'll definitely be out there one way or the other. So it'd be nice to meet you in person. So thanks for checking in, and thanks for listening to the show. Also heard from Adam over at the boringrunner.blogspot.com, and he said he was asking me about changing my shoes 3 or 4 times during the race, referring to my 50-miler, and he said, was there any indication that your feet were going to pot on you beforehand, or was it just the last miles on your last set of shoes that did them in? Adam, that's a real good question, and I've done a lot of analysis on that, and all I can say is that around the 35-mile mark, I changed into fresh shoes and fresh socks, and my feet were intact. However, they were pretty, beat up in the heat and running on the trails and stuff. However, I think where I went wrong was I should have put on newer shoes for the last part of the race because of the hills and the climbs, and maybe some padded, I don't know. I really don't know. I think what I should have done from the beginning is use powder in my socks and on my shoes and dried them up before I put socks back on and put powder in my shoes, and probably should have taped my feet. I've just never had to do that before, so I didn't consider it. And probably taping them after they'd been in shoes for 35 miles probably wouldn't have been a good time. So, no, I did not. I did know that they were going to pot, but I did not know that the skin had broken open to the point where it was going to be pulled off as bad as it did. And these were not hiking blisters, people. Rake and leave blisters, between your thumb and your index finger. This was, it was extreme and it was nasty. And it's not going to happen again. I can assure you, I will, if I feel the pain, I'm going to definitely stop and check them out. But, Adam, the thing is, after I started getting used to the pain, which was pretty severe, I didn't want to take my shoes and socks off. I just wanted to finish, and that's where you kind of overcome maybe good judgment, because, it was getting weird there towards, after being on my feet for 11 hours running in the heat and, doing my walking and stuff, doing lots of walking. I wasn't thinking clearly. And I probably wasn't communicating enough to my crew member, Greg, I never said anything like, hey, we're going to stop, I need to check this out. He knew they were hurting because he could see me just doing some little spurts of running and then seeing how much it hurt. It actually probably hurt more to walk, because when I was running, I wasn't putting as much pressure on it for as long. I don't know. I didn't communicate enough with my pacer to where he would even have to make a decision and say, hey, let's stop and take a look, because I just said, we're keeping going. We're just going to keep going forward. We're not stopping. And, you know, what was he to do? You know, he just kind of had to, in a way, kind of had to go along with it. But, you know, he did great. I wouldn't have finished if it wasn't for Greg, because he made sure we got inside the cutoff. So, no, I guess yes and no, Adam, to answer your question. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't really answer it. But anyway, for the rest of y'all, check out Adam's blog, theboringrunner.blogspot.com or some variation of that. Just put The Boring Runner in your search engine. He's just got some funny stuff on there. I'm telling you, his sense of humor is over the top on some of these things. And, I mean, I'm laughing out loud, and I'm definitely checking his blog like every other day for some new funny stuff. So anyway, Adam, thanks for doing that. Also, Christina checked in, and a little while back she did. And she had a entry on her blog, which was Lazy Bones Runner, about trash and or recycling, because she knows how much I dislike trash or litter. And I did not know this, but she had a entry on there about how if you try to recycle your plastic bottle and it has a cap on it, it actually ends up getting thrown away anyhow. And that's a shame that that happens. So make sure you take your caps off. And Christina, thanks for pointing that out, and I definitely agree with you on that. So that is it for mailbag this week, and I did think of one thing from the West Virginia race that I have to include, because it was another, this was just so indicative of maybe highway workers in West Virginia, or at least some of them. On the way into Williamson, they had one of the marquee signs on the side of the highway, similar to what your Department of Transportation might put up if there's an accident ahead, or there's going to be a race in the area. They might put up this marquee, you know, with the lights in it to indicate that there's going to be an event happening just to warn motorists. Well, the one they had on the side of the road in Williamson said it was Gander Mountain was one of the sponsors of the marathon, and they were having their expo. And the way it was worded on the marquee sign was Gander Mountain Expo, E-X-P-O-O. And we figured that maybe either someone did that intentionally or someone didn't know how to spell expo, so they spelled it expo. So what we figured out was that an expo is very much like an expo. You just need to have waterproof boots on for the expo. And another part of the marquee sign had, it said, Hatfield McCoy 26K Marathon. So we didn't find the 26K Marathon either. So anyway, we got a big kick out of that stuff. Maybe that's indicative of another West Virginia joke, you know. Sorry, West Virginia, but lots of people have jokes at y'all's expense. That's just the way it is in the United States. Okay, well, that's the show for this week. I'll be back within 2 weeks, I hope, with the next show. This is turning into more of a bi-weekly podcast, sometimes a weekly podcast. But I do appreciate the downloads. And if you want to send me an email to let me know what you're up to with your distance running, I'd love to hear from you. It's ashlanddave@gmail.com. And you can send me an email from anywhere in the world, and it'll find me here in Ashland, Virginia. So anyway, this is Ashland Dave, and I am not running in the center of the universe right now. I'm taking a little break. Let my body heal up. Let my blisters totally heal over. I have gone back to work. I was out for 2 weeks. But I did watch just about every World Cup match that was on TV. So that was really the only benefit. And I am reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all have a good week, and I'll talk to you later. We'll be right back.